Ever get the feeling that Hollywood like plays by its own rules?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, today's deep dive might just explain why. We're rewinding way back to the Wild West of early cinema
Yeah.
from 1895 to 1915 to uncover the pretty ruthless power struggles that shaped the industry we know and love today.
And trust me, it was a wild west,
Right.
like in every sense of the word.
Really?
Imagine you're trying to watch a film
Okay.
and suddenly a fist fight breaks out in the theater, or worse, someone takes a shot at the projection booth.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's an experience even IMAX can't replicate.
Right.
But seriously, though, these historical research papers that we're diving into, they reveal a time when fortunes were made and lost literally overnight.
Yeah.
And cinematic visionaries, they weren't afraid to play dirty to get their way.
It's almost hard to believe how quickly the industry transformed from like a technological marvel to like a cutthroat battleground.
Yeah.
And at the center of it all,
Who?
none other than Thomas Edison.
Edison, right. Everyone knows him as the light bulb guy,
Yeah.
but he was also like a pretty ruthless businessman.
Yeah.
He saw film as more than just entertainment. He saw an empire waiting to be built.
Exactly. And Edison wasn't afraid to use every tool at his disposal. Lawsuits, intimidation tactics, you name it. He even had his own enforcers.
What?
These guys called knockplugs, who would literally sabotage competitors' film sets.
Really?
We're talking destroying equipment, disrupting filming, even firing guns to scare people off.
It sounds like something straight out of a gangster movie.
Right.
Only this was like happening in real life.
Yeah.
And the kicker is, Edison believed he was entitled to a cut of every single film made or shown,
Wow.
even imports, all based on his patent claims.
Can you imagine that?
It's crazy.
It would be like one company today trying to control every aspect of the streaming industry, from production to your Netflix queue. That's the level of ambition Edison was operating on.
Talk about a monopoly. But
No.
thankfully, not everyone was willing to play by Edison's rules. Eastman Kodak, the ones who supplied the film stock, weren't too keen on letting him have all the fun, or all the profits for that matter.
Right. Eastman Kodak knew that a thriving film industry meant selling a lot more film stock.
Yeah.
So they pushed back against Edison's quest for total domination.
Okay.
And this is where things get really interesting.
So instead of one absolute ruler, we get a cartel. Tell me more about this motion picture patents company, the one I've read about. Everyone calls it the trust.
That's the one. Think of it as a forced alliance of major players, all with Edison at the helm, of course. Instead of outright owning everything, they created a system to control the industry from within.
Okay, so how did this control actually play out for like the everyday moviegoer?
Oh, they absolutely noticed.
Yeah.
Imagine going to your local Nickelodeon, those early storefront theaters,
Yeah.
and finding out that ticket prices were fixed. There were only a handful of films to choose from. And even then, some scenes might have been cut out.
Wait, censorship already back then. What were they so afraid of?
Well, you have to remember, this was a new form of entertainment.
Right.
And some people saw it as a threat to morality.
Interesting.
The MPPC justified censorship as a way to improve film quality, but it was also a powerful tool to control what audiences could and couldn't see.
It's amazing how history repeats itself, isn't it?
Yeah.
Every new medium seems to spark this kind of moral panic. But as we know, you can't keep a good story down for long, or a good storyteller for that matter. That's where our underdog, the American Mutoscope and Biograph Company, or Biograph for short, enters the scene.
Biograph, they were different. They weren't just another studio trying to get a piece of the pie. They had their own valuable patents,
Interesting.
making them a legitimate threat to Edison's empire. And they were not about to be bullied into joining the MPPC.
So it's like a real David and Goliath situation
Yeah.
brewing here, the scrappy upstart versus the established giant.
Absolutely. And just like in the biblical story, David had a few tricks up his sleeve. The legal battles between Edison and Biograph were legendary.
Really?
Full of accusations, counter-accusations. But Biograph landed a critical blow when they used the Latham Loop patent against Edison.
Now, the Latham Loop, for those of us who aren't film historians, what exactly was so special about it?
It might sound simple, but the Latham Loop was revolutionary. See, before this invention, films could only be a few minutes long because the film would constantly break. The Latham Loop allowed for longer films by creating slack in the film strip, reducing tension and breakage.
So basically, the Latham Loop paved the way for feature-length films as we know them today.
Exactly. It's incredible to think that something so fundamental to how we experience cinema today came out of such a cutthroat rivalry. But here's the thing. This battle for control, it wasn't just playing out in American courtrooms and backlots.
No.
It was sending shockwaves across the globe.
You mean Edison's grip on the industry was so tight that even filmmakers in Europe felt the squeeze?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, this is the early 1900s, and the American film industry, while still young, was a major exporter of films.
Makes sense.
So when the MPPC came along with its strict rules and regulations, it threw the European film industry into chaos.
So what did they do? Did they just roll over and let the MPPC call the shots?
Not without a fight. You might be surprised to learn that European filmmakers attempted to create their own cartel in response to the American one. They were worried about their own filmmaking traditions being overshadowed.
Yeah.
And rightfully so.
Right.
So
it becomes this international game of chess.
Yes.
With each side trying to outmaneuver the other.
Precisely. And it's a fascinating look at how cultural anxieties and economic realities were intertwined in the early days of cinema.
Yeah.
But as we'll see, the European cartel faced its own unique set of challenges.
So we've got these, like, dueling cartels.
Yeah.
One American, one European, both vying for control of this new world of cinema. What made the European situation so different, so challenging?
Well, it boils down to the fact that Europe, like, cinematically speaking, was far less unified than the U.S. Imagine, like, instead of one Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
You've got filmmaking hubs in Paris, Rome, Berlin.
Right.
Each with its own distinct style, language, and audience.
So trying to impose a single set of rules on such a diverse landscape, I mean, that was always going to be an uphill battle.
Exactly. Plus, the European industry was still very much finding its feet.
Yeah.
They didn't have the same level of, like, financial backing or infrastructure as their American counterparts.
Yeah, it's a classic case of easier said than done, right?
Absolutely. The infighting alone amongst the European producers was enough to kind of derail the whole cartel. And let's not forget the exhibitors and smaller distributors. They were just as resistant to being controlled as their American counterparts, if not more so.
It makes you wonder if the European cartel was, like, doomed from the start.
Perhaps. But, while this whole international drama was unfolding back in the U.S., a new breed of filmmaker was emerging. They were about to challenge the status quo and change the face of cinema, like, forever.
This is where those independent filmmakers come in, right?
Yes.
I've read names like William Fox, Carl Lammel, William Hodkinson. What set them apart from the MPPC establishment?
They were risk takers.
Oh.
Visionaries who saw an opportunity in catering to an audience that the MPPC had overlooked.
Yeah.
A more diverse urban audience hungry for stories that reflected their lives.
And the MPPC, with its focus on, like, control and censorship, they were essentially stuck making films for an audience that didn't really exist anymore.
Precisely. Think about it. The MPPC was churning out these, like, short, simplistic films,
mm-hmm.
while the independents were pushing boundaries,
yeah.
experimenting with, like, longer narratives,
yeah.
and exploring more realistic themes.
It's almost like comparing, like, a silent movie to a talkie.
Yeah.
Two completely different experiences.
That's a great analogy. And it wasn't just the stories themselves. The independents, they understood the importance of, like, the whole movie-going experience.
You're talking about, like, those grand, opulent movie palaces that started popping up.
Yes.
I've always been fascinated by those.
And for good reason. Those theaters were palaces in every sense of the word.
Mm.
Luxurious, exotic, designed to transport audiences to another world.
Mm-hmm.
It was a far cry from the cramped, often dingy Nickelodeons of the MPPC era.
So the independents offered better films, a better experience. It sounds like the MPPC was really starting to lose its grip. But how did the independents overcome the MPPC's control over film distribution? That seems like a major hurdle.
It was a David and Goliath situation, no doubt. Remember that the MPPC tried to control the supply of film stock through Eastman Kodak?
Right.
Well, the independents found a clever workaround.
Let me guess, they went international.
Exactly. They started getting their film stock from Lumiere, a French company.
Wow.
It was a risky move, but it paid off. And here's the kicker. It turned out Eastman was secretly supplying Lumiere with the film stock all along.
Wait, so Eastman, a member of the MPPC, was undermining his own cartel? That's incredible.
It just goes to show that even back then, business was business. And there was a lot of money to be made in a booming film industry, even if it meant bending the rules a bit.
So the independents had the films, they had the audience, and they found a way to get around the MPPC's control over film stock. But the MPPC still held a lot of power. What finally tipped the scales in the independents' favor?
Well, you can't tell the story of the independents' rise without talking about those, landmark antitrust lawsuits filed against the MPPC in 1912.
Right, the ones filed by William Fox and Carl Amel.
Exactly. These weren't just like petty legal squabbles. These were major challenges to the very foundation of the MPPC's power. And they dragged on for years, both sides, you know, pulling out all the stops.
It sounds like a Hollywood screenwriter's dream. Courtroom drama, backroom deals, the fate of an industry hanging in the balance. Who came out on top?
Well, in a landmark decision, the courts ultimately sided with the independents. The MPPC was ordered to dismantle its monopolistic practices, a major victory for open competition in the film industry.
That's a pretty decisive victory. So does this mark the end of the MPPC, the fall of the Edison Empire? It sounds like a knockout punch, right?
Yeah.
The courts siding with the independents, the MPPC forced to dismantle. Does this mean it's a happy ending for our underdog heroes?
Well, in the world of movies, it's rarely that simple.
Right. Yeah.
The MPPC might be down for the count, but the fight for control in Hollywood is, as you can imagine, far from over.
Let me guess. Those scrappy independents, now with a taste of victory, they start becoming a little bit like the old guard they fought so hard to overthrow.
It's the classic Hollywood story, isn't it?
Yeah.
The outsiders become the insiders. Yeah. Companies like Universal, 20th Century Fox, Warner Bros.
Yeah.
All born from the independent movement. They would go on to become, you know, the new titans of the industry.
Talk about a plot twist. So even with the MPPC gone, that tension between artistic vision and, well, let's call it creative control, yeah, it never really goes away.
Exactly. It's a constant push and pull. But what's fascinating is how this battle played out, like not just in courtrooms and boardrooms, but on screen as well.
Okay.
The types of films being made, the even the way audiences experience cinema, all of that was transformed by this power struggle.
I can only imagine the MPPC with their like short, simplistic films, the strict censorship, they weren't exactly pushing the boundaries of like cinematic art, were they?
Not at all. They were stuck in a rut. While the independents, they embraced innovation. Think about like the rise of film d'art, this movement in Europe that sought to elevate cinema to the level of like high art.
Now, I've heard that term before, film d'art. What was it about these films that set them apart?
Everything. Lavish productions, literary adaptations.
Wow.
They even started using like famous stage actors.
Yeah.
You know, bringing a whole new level of prestige to the screen. The independents were smart enough to like see the appeal. Importing and distributing these films for American audiences hungry for something, you know, more sophisticated.
It's amazing how connected the film industries were, even back then. But this also shows how the MPPC, so focused on maintaining control, completely missed the boat on what audiences were craving.
Precisely. They underestimated the power of a good story, well told. The film d'art movement proved that audiences were ready for more than just like simple entertainment. They were hungry for artistry, for emotional depth, for cinema that, you know, challenged and moved them.
And the independents were the ones serving up that cinematic feast. No wonder they won over audiences. But this whole story, it makes you wonder, would Hollywood be the Hollywood we know and love today if the MPPC had succeeded in maintaining its grip on the industry?
It's a question worth pondering. Would those iconic studios have ever emerged? Would certain voices and stories have been silenced? It's a reminder that the history of cinema, like any art form, is a constant dance between like creativity, commerce, and the struggle for control.
And it's the dance that continues to this day, right?
Oh, absolutely.
We might not have cartels and knock clicks anymore, but the fight for who gets to tell their stories and whose voices get amplified, that's as relevant now as it was back then.
Absolutely. So the next time you're like scrolling through Netflix, feeling overwhelmed by like the sheer volume of content.
Yeah.
Or you're captivated by a film that truly speaks to you. Remember those early pioneers of cinema, battling not just for profits, but for the very soul of storytelling.
It's a reminder that the stories we tell, the ones we choose to watch and support, they have power. They shape our culture, our understanding of the world, even ourselves. And that, my friends, is something worth thinking about long after this deep dive is over.